Broadcasting from the heartland of America.
In the Hoosier Media Network studios.
The next generation in conservative talk radio. This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Darn right it is. Welcome into it. It's hour number two of the Voice of Reason, broadcasting out of the heart of the nation here at the Hoosier Media Network studios. We are all over the country, multiple radio stations and TV, live streaming, podcasting, however you watch or listen to the show. So great to have you along for the ride for hour number two of our weekend edition. Programming notes for you. We are expanding our broadcast reach, especially on the video side of things, where you can find the video on our website at HoosierReason.com, H-O-O-S-E-R Reason.com. We still have it on our social media sites as well, which is all the handle at Hoosier Reason on Facebook and on the Tweety. I don't believe we're on YouTube right now because YouTube doesn't like me very much and they like to censor what we're doing. Even if you broadcast this as a delayed broadcast on the radio or you listen to it at a later time, you can still find the videos at a later time. You can listen to the podcast downloads, which thank you again. You guys are amazing. 100,000 downloads on the podcast, which is absolutely phenomenal. So every day throughout the week and our weekend program, we upload it as a podcast after the radio show so you can listen to it at a later time if you can't listen to the radio show, and you guys are killing it. So we hit 100,000, which is a massive landmark. You guys are amazing. Thank you so much. You can find it if you haven't at any of your favorite podcasting sites. Just type in The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier, and you can subscribe, have it automatically downloaded, and check it out each and every day. All right, we got a lot to talk about. Real quickly, if you were listening to the last hour, Adam Swart, he is with crowdsondemand.com. If you listen to his terminology, and for those that may be relatively new to this program, you got to understand, we go deeper on this program than most radio programs. We go and we unveil the layers of the onion, and we go into the psychology, we go into the philosophy, we go into the deeper understandings. There is an ongoing understanding, especially in the military world, that you cannot defeat your enemy unless you understand your enemy, which is what we try to do on this show. And not saying that Adam's an enemy, but he is one with Crowds on Demand, where his organization, his business, how he makes his living is literally having people or organizations or groups or businesses come to him and say, we want to protest, we want to do this. And he organizes it. He comes out with the clear messaging for them. He comes out with the messaging and the signs and the billboards and all the stuff for them. He even pays people to partake in the protests for this message, whatever it may be. And while I personally strongly disagree with paying protesters to be out there, because if it's passionate enough for you, if it's emotional enough, if you're attached to it deep enough, you're going to find a way to make it happen, which is why conservative rallies are relatively smaller than Democrat rallies. Because predominantly the Democrats are ones that pay their protesters to go out and do that. And they think that that can make a living for them to go out and spread their message and change the world. We understand as conservatives that we have jobs and we work a 9-to-5 or we work 7 hours a day or 7 days a week, or we work astronomical hours. And then we have to put food on the table and do all our shopping and pay the bills. And then we got to try and find time to spend time with the family and so on and so forth. But if something's really important to us, like desperately important to us, we sacrifice that time away from our job or our families to make that happen, to make our voice heard. That's what we do. Some of the other side of the aisle believes that they should get paid to promote a certain message. I mean, I get paid to promote a certain message because this is what I do for a living, but this is a little bit different than sitting out on a street sign and holding a yard sign and chanting about something over and over. So I disagree with the paid protester mindset. I believe that it needs to be done based on the fact that I strongly believe in it, strong enough to sacrifice the time away from my family or my job to go and make that happen. Nonetheless, to understand the psychology of what it takes to actually change people's opinions, to bring an awareness to a certain issue, which we have to admit Democrats do vastly better than what Republicans do. We have our messages. We have our Conservative Political Action Conference, our CPAC, every year. We have rallies that Donald Trump goes to that brings in 20, 30,000 people at a Coliseum. We have our stuff, but it's not widening the realm to bring new people into the fold. It's kind of in our own little echo chamber. Conservative podcasts, conservative talk radio. We're kind of in an echo chamber unless a Democrat randomly flips onto an AM frequency and hears us, or the FM side sometimes in some markets, and listens to it. And they're like, huh, wow, that makes sense, which does happen. I'm not saying it, but we're not actively reaching a new demographic for people to understand what we believe in and our views of the world and how we want to change things. And we got to find a way to do it. And to me, the only way to do it is to talk to people that know how to do it, which is what he did. So I really appreciated that interview, and I think it was quite fascinating. And I think that it's something that we need to start doing better at as Republicans to try and find ways to win over new demographics, because that's exactly what needs to happen. All right, we have a lot to talk about. Bottom of this hour, we have Dean Clancy. He's a senior policy fellow for Americans for Prosperity. Great partners with us here on the radio show every week. We'll chat with him about Bidenomics, the cost of health care in society today, and what Joe Biden and the Biden administration's campaigning on right now. Which, speaking of campaigns, this is the beauty of having a live weekend program across the nation right now.
What's trending today?
I'm essentially taking my show prep and throwing it out to the side right now, because there are some things going on this weekend that right now, actually, that we're talking that we need to address. According to Fox News, some headlines right now: Vice President Kamala Harris working her way down to the state of Florida to promote the latest in their agenda on the campaign trail. Now, I want to preface this by asking you a question on how well and how successful and how influential and how popular has an agenda been for the Democrat side when they mention guns as one of their top campaign topics or issues. I'd like to remind you, in the last presidential election, we had Eric Swalwell. We had Beto O'Rourke. Remember that guy down in Texas? Yeah, he's fun. He's a good one. We had Joe Biden. We had the governor up in Washington. Can't remember his name right now. That were all making guns and the confiscation of firearms one of their top priorities on the campaign trail, which is why they dropped out, because they had 0% in approval ratings. Kamala Harris even made that one of her top priorities, which is why she was floating at around 2% in the approval ratings in the polls when she ran for president in 2020. There was a massive push for Second Amendment issues, and you would think that they would learn their lesson that it's not a popular issue to campaign on the campaign trail. They still advocate for it when they're in the office, but to actually make it their campaign talking points, it's a very triggering, pun intended, issue for people to try and run for office on, saying that we're going to essentially put more caps and more restrictions and regulations onto the Second Amendment. Democrats always want to, but they usually keep it hush-hush. And you can look at example after example after example of that throughout the years. On every time they do bring it up, their popularity goes down. New Mexico's governor that just tried to say, well, we're going to implement this gun confiscation, or you're not allowed to have any type of firearm in public places in these couple of counties. And it's not going to stop, and she openly admitted, it's not going to stop bad guys from carrying firearms. It's just because we want to make a strong, bold statement that we're not going to tolerate gun violence any longer, so no one can do it, even though gun criminals that aren't following the law in the first place aren't going to follow this law, but we're going to do it to law-abiding citizens to prove a point to the bad guys that we're not messing around. That makes a whole lot of sense. I know, right? Does that? Okay. Making sure. But going on right now. Why? Because we're awesome doing this live on the weekend.
We'll do it live.
We have Vice President Kamala Harris down in the state of Florida campaigning, talking about a new effort from the Biden administration that, quote, focuses on training and technical assistance to individuals that are responsible for implementing laws designed to keep guns out of the hands of people who pose a threat to themselves or to others. This, my friends, if you are not aware of this term, is called a red flag law. For those that don't know what a red flag law is, it is a way to implement that many states are trying to go towards, the federal government's been trying to go towards, where they are working on ways to say that if someone believes that you may be a threat to others or yourself, they can go to a court. They can get a court order, and law enforcement can come and confiscate your gun without your knowledge or your defense or your say in court. Then you have to actually challenge it, go to court, and actually get your firearms back. Now, that is an absolute abuse and tyranny against your due process, because I thought in this nation we were innocent until proven guilty. So they're essentially saying, we're going to take your firearms, and then in order for you to have your Second Amendment rights reestablished to you, you have to go through the court system to prove to yourself and essentially prove a negative that you're not going to harm yourself or to others. I don't know how you can do that. I thought that's what background checks were for, but apparently not. And they're starting to realize that background checks only do can only look at your history from behind you, not what you're going to do in the future. And they've tried numerous ways to try and look at what you're going to do in the future. by looking at your trends on social media, data collection, or, you know, metadata collection from the Patriot Act and other means of them collecting your social media and your texts and your phone calls and your conversations and everything else that you do. Yeah, they collect all that. Another conversation for another time. But the red flag law essentially says, hey, they've been depressed for a while. Andy's been going through a really tough time, and he lost his job, and, you know, his dog died and all this. He's going through a tough time. I'm worried about him. I think he's going to cause harm to himself, or he's going to lash out. He's been having a stressful time at work, and he's going to go postal and actually shoot up his workplace. And I'm really concerned about him. So we're going to go to a court. We're going to have his guns taken away, and he's not going to have a say in the process. He won't even know it's happening until the law enforcement actually shows up to take the gun away. Tell me how that's constitutional at all in any way, shape, or form. It's not, obviously. That's the common sense. That's a rhetorical question for the other side of the aisle, trying to break this down very easily for you. That is now a major campaign point for the Democrats and for the Biden administration. While they're losing nationwide, there's like 8 polls out there that show that Joe Biden's up, and the media is all raving about those right now. He's not. In fact, he's losing in every major swing state right now. And even states that aren't supposed to be swing states that are center left, he's starting to lose, and that Donald Trump is actually in play in these states right now, like Michigan, like Minnesota, largely because of the Muslim population and these minorities, that they're losing left and right on these issues. And they're desperate to stand out with essentially an entirely new campaign slogan, which is get rid of the term Bidenomics, which is try to be tough on immigration, taking a weird conservative stance on that, saying they're going to be tougher on immigration than Donald Trump. And now going back to the old well, which is let's go after the guns and try and rally the troops on the anti-Second Amendment crowd. The Republicans are calling this the new massive red flag operation, is what they're calling this. But according to the National Extreme Risk Protection Order, in the rally that Kamala Harris is hosting this weekend, according to the Department of Justice press release that was released early on Saturday, will specifically provide assistance to law enforcement officials, prosecutors, attorneys, judges, and clinics, victim service and social service providers, along with community organizations and behavioral health professionals, giving them assistance. So that way, if we have someone that is really concerned, they were concerned about harming someone else or harming themselves, that they have the resources to swoop in and to handle the issue proactively before the deed is actually done. I'm curious on where they got off thinking that they know what we're going to do better than what we're going to do. I know they're tracking our shopping sprees and our shopping trends and what our social media looks like. I get it. So they can build a somewhat of a portfolio, but at the same time, how do you know what you're going to do? And really, that reinforces the idea that the only way that you can stop crime is to anticipate what someone's going to do, which you're not able to do. So we focus on maybe mental health issues, maybe the reason why there's so many people on medications or pain meds or the big pharma, or we have some type of drug issue, or maybe someone who's stressed about their finances. We can look at factors and address those. But now they're looking at trying to find new ways to expand their red flag laws and promote gun confiscation in the nation. That's the presidential campaign platform now.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. It's your Patriot on the Prairie. This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Welcome back into the program, 24 minutes past the hour. So there is an interesting point to this. I mean, the campaign trail, I'm sure, has been planning this for a while. But there are always two questions that we have when anything's being passed. And I want you to ask this to your state legislative sessions and your legislators at the local level, your county commission, city council, state legislature, federal government. There are two questions you always need to ask when they're talking about passing new bills. How are you going to enforce it? And how are you going to pay for it? Those are two questions. And if they can't answer those, then it's a ridiculously stupid bill and you shouldn't be doing it. How are you going to enforce it? And how are you going to fund it? Because more than likely, they're going to say, well, we're going to have to raise levies, or may raise up your mill levy, or raise up taxes. And because that's usually the response whenever there's a new government program. You have to actually fund it somehow. So they're going to have to find a new source of revenue for a new thing. So the question is that, number one, how are you going to regulate something like this massive red flag law? You're going to work with local law enforcement and work with all these new agencies and work with them and work with this and work with that. Okay, cool. What does that mean? What does that mean when you're going to work with them on a red flag law to try and stop gun crimes or gun related deaths or whatever they're trying to call it now, as Kamala Harris is campaigning on this weekend down in Florida? How are you going to regulate something like this? You can give all the money in the world to local law enforcement, but what does that mean for them to figure out your habits to know that you're going to harm somebody else or yourself? I don't even know what that means. Are they like surveilling you? Are they going to tap into like more of your cell phone conversations for you when you're talking in your bedroom? You're like, ah, I'm so sick of you. I'm tired of this crap. I can't deal anymore. And then you get a knock. You get a knock from law enforcement. We heard that you were pretty upset. Did someone call and complain about like a noise? No. We heard it from your phone and we thought that you might be too upset and you might actually harm somebody. So we're here for a potential domestic dispute that hasn't happened yet. Like, is that what we're doing here? What kind of resources are we talking about? Let's talk about taxes. How are we going to fund this? It's a brand new program that apparently hasn't been done yet, but this massive red flag operation that they're looking at through the National Extreme Risk Protection Order, where they're giving these resources to through the Department of Justice. Now, the Department of Justice has already had their appropriations bill planned, so either this was in the first six appropriation bills that were passed early this month from Congress, or it was just included in the $1.2 trillion bill that was the final six appropriation bills that they voted on this past week before the government shut down on Friday and everybody would have died because, by golly, the government wouldn't have been there on the weekend for us to be able to survive.
We're all going to die because of you!
So which one of these two includes the funding for the National Extreme Risk Protection Order Resource Center through the Department of Justice that's going to send money, or I'm sorry, resources that are funded by taxpayer funds to law enforcement, prosecutors, attorneys, judges, clinics, victim services, social service providers, community organizations, and behavioral health professionals? Where's that money coming from, or what resources are we actually giving them? I got a lot of questions here, but how do you enforce it and how do you fund it with these programs? And then, of course, the constitutional legalities on the other side of this as well that are absolutely ridiculous. But Kamala Harris now making that the campaign talking points of how they're going to go after guns. I'm here to tell you that if that's what they're going to use, because it's an unpopular topic to talk about right now, and it's always an unpopular topic to talk about for the Democrats, because even Democrats that are mainstream Democrats, they don't want all firearms to be taken away either, but a blanket open door policy to try and start retrieving firearms from American citizens, violating the Second Amendment, that's never been a successful campaign talking point, and it never will be a successful campaign talking point. And if that's all you have to run on in a presidential election, when you can't talk about the economy, you can't talk about immigration, you can't talk about foreign policy, you can't talk about your environmental movement, you can't talk about anything else except for guns, then I say this a lot, but hey, Joe Biden, you might want to cover up your desperation showing just a little bit. If that's all you have and that's what you're falling back on. Okay, cool. Very interesting. Dean Clancy, Americans for Prosperity, he'll be joining us to talk about some of this and more right around the corner for the weekend edition of The Voice of Reason. Stay here.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. When Reason Meets Radio, this is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Am I being too mean to Joe Biden? I think I'm being too mean. Come on, I'm being a little mean, right, Joe? Oh, we got to check in with him. You doing all right, buddy? Am I being too mean?
Come on, man. Get a life.
I'm sorry. Welcome back into it here on the home stretch here. Last half hour of the program, how it flies on by. Looking at some of the polls, I know that there's a poll floating out there, or there's supposedly eight polls floating out there right now that Joe Biden is up and against over Donald Trump moving forward, which I find quite fascinating. I don't know if that's necessarily true, but CNN ran an interesting piece saying that when it comes to especially the minority voters across the nation, that the lead for the Democrats is actually narrowing a lot, more so than what they'd like to admit. And this is probably the last broadcast this CNN anchor's allowed to have, because you're not allowed to say positive things about Donald Trump, especially on CNN. But he did come out and say this.
So let's break this down by race, right? Let's look at voters of color, look at white voters. And what we see here is back in 2020, according to the exit poll, Joe Biden won voters of color in Michigan by 62 points. Look at that advantage today. It has been sliced by a third. Only 21 points. That's Joe Biden's lead over Donald Trump among voters of color. Among white voters, Donald Trump has gained a little bit of steam as well. It was 11 points in 2020. His margin over Joe Biden right now is 16 points. But this decline in support for Joe Biden among voters of color in Michigan is something we've been seeing in state after state after state, and nationally as well, where he's got some big problems. This is a historic low amount of support for a Democratic presidential candidate among voters of color, and it seems to be happening across the board.
Gee, I wonder why. I wonder why that is. And it's not just because of the identity politics the other side likes to play, the black, the Hispanic, the Asian, the woman, the whatever else, fill in the blank, the other, whatever they like to say, the third genders, whatever it may be in identity politics they like to play. There's a basic commonality. There's a common denominator between all of those individuals, if you want to put it that way, on why they're frustrated with the Democrats and the Joe Biden administration. It might be because of the fact that inflation's up 20% over the past 3 years. Just a possibility. It might be because food itself is up near 30% over the past 3 years with the inflation. It might be because gas prices are astronomically high. It might be because since the taking over of Obamacare, healthcare prices are astronomical for both individual plans, for family plans, and for business plans. I don't know, just throwing those ideas out. And while conservatives need to do a better job at bringing the emotional attachment to an issue, which is, again, what we talked about in the last hour, driving people to be more passionate about a problem, that we see the numbers blatantly right before us. And more people, especially in minority communities or in low-income communities or in diverse communities, are all feeling this pinch. And we're seeing a middle class being squeezed, a increase in a lower class, and then the lower class is getting shafted as well, because then we have the federal government supporting illegal immigrants. I don't know. There's a lot to that one, that the Biden administration is looking at you directly in the eye and saying, these aren't the droids you're looking for. To talk about some of that and more,
let's go to the Hoosier Media Hotline.
Happy to have this guy back on the program with us. I love getting him on with our partners here with Americans for Prosperity, great partners and sponsors on The Voice of Reason. He's a senior policy fellow with Americans for Prosperity, Mr. Dean Clancy. Dean, how are you, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing great, thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on the show. It's always good to chat with you. The costs that we're seeing, healthcare, insurance, inflation, food, gas, it's pinching the pocketbooks of everybody out there, which is why we're seeing the polls that we're seeing right now, aren't we? People are just done with Bidenomics and what the Joe Biden administration's done for the past 3 years.
Yeah, Bidenomics has turned out not to be a political winner because it's just leading to a harder life for people. In our polling at Americans for Prosperity, we find people's number one concerns are the economy, inflation, and coming in third, the high cost of health care. And all of those things have gotten worse under this president. It's a real problem.
It is a real problem. Let's talk about health care specifically for a moment, because more and more people, I think, are starting to realize and wanting to walk away from this health care industry, but it's so difficult to do so. But, I mean, I remember seeing the numbers prior to Obamacare and then seeing after Obamacare where deductibles tripled. Premiums ended up tripling. Then you need a specialist, and half the time that your deductible and your insurance then doesn't even cover certain specialists at a time. The pharmaceuticals have gone up dramatically. And Joe Biden's out there saying that we're going to lower insulin down to $35 or whatever he's saying. I don't know how he's able to do that when they've kind of screwed everything up in the healthcare industry as a whole, haven't they?
Yeah, you have it absolutely right. Healthcare costs have risen faster than inflation under this president. And since the Affordable Care Act was enacted, which, by the way, was exactly 14 years ago today, and it's been implemented for 10 years, we now have the results. It has doubled what health insurance costs. It's tripled the amount you have to pay out of pocket for health care. It's getting harder to find a doctor or a facility in your health insurance plan's network. All of that is a result of the costly government mandates and taxes that came with Obamacare. And, you know, people, I think, are starting to wake up to it. The promises of that law have not come true. And it's really, you know, wait times are going up. Life expectancy is dropping. Basically, healthcare is not getting better in America. And a lot of that has to do with government policy.
That is very true. Where do we rank right now, do you think, globally, when it comes to healthcare cost and when it comes to healthcare quality? I know before we used to dominate. People would come to America from all over the world wanting their stuff because obviously, and I still think we're up there when it comes to technology and the accessibility of certain procedures that other nations are unable to do. But when it comes to the quality of that stuff and the price of these, I don't know that we're as competitive as what we used to be.
No, that's right. America has the most expensive healthcare system in the world. Now, a lot of that is price. The quality does, in fact, tend to be very high. You're right about that. But it's not going growing as fast as it should be because of the sort of the weight of bad government policies, government price controls on prescription drugs. You mentioned $35 insulin. Most Americans, by the way, already have $35 insulin or less through their insurance. It's really a small percentage who have to pay more if they're paying out of pocket. And we do need to reform, you know, how we regulate patents and prescription drugs so that we can get more generic competition. In general, America has the best healthcare system in the world, despite all that's happened. But it is way too expensive for people, and there's no excuse for it. With more competitive markets, with if we give patients more control over their healthcare dollars, you'll start to see healthcare prices come down and quality improve. In America, the healthcare industry is the only one where you don't routinely see the price of the product before you have to pay for it. In healthcare, they don't show you the price, no transparency, and that's because we've disconnected patients from their care. They're not paying for it. Some insurance company or the government is paying for it. People don't ask about the price. 90% of Americans pay for health care through some third party, through strangers. We need to change that. Put more power in the hands of patients.
Yeah, it is unfortunate. And even when those quote-unquote prices go down for the consumer, they're not going down on the back end, are they? They're just being subsidized in a different way where we don't see that initial cost, but they're still being charged the same amount, and government's just kind of covering it and compensating for it, isn't it?
Yeah, a lot of yes, exactly. In fact, with the Obamacare health insurance plans that you get through healthcare.gov online, you know, people are getting them for like $10 a month, $50 a month, sometimes no premium at all. It's, you know, amazingly affordable. Well, it turns out they're extremely expensive, but almost all of the price is being paid for by taxpayers. As a result, we are sending more than $200 billion a year, with a B, to the health insurance industry to provide this very expensive insurance with really high deductibles. It's not great coverage, but the premium is really low because the taxpayers are footing the bill.
It is unfortunate. We're talking with Dean Clancy. He's a senior policy fellow for Americans for Prosperity. You can find prosperityispossible.com, also americansforprosperity.org, and go and check out their website and everything that they're doing. How much would, and I know Donald Trump campaigned on this the last time, I know he's talking about it some this time as well, but competition in the insurance market, flooding the market back with more insurance companies, allowing the price to go down a little bit, being able to tailor your package, actually having competition in the market on that front, would that help this issue or at least solve a little bit of the problem?
Yes, absolutely. Before Obamacare, you could, in most states, some states had overregulated, but in a lot of states, most of them, you could find insurance tailored to your needs. It wasn't a perfect system, but it was a lot better and a lot more affordable than what we have today. And you know, why is it that everyone has to have exactly the same really expensive health insurance package designed by politicians and bureaucrats in Washington? Why not let markets work? People need insurance. They want insurance. But at these prices, a lot of people, they can't afford it without subsidies. So we need reforms to do that. And it's a shame that we didn't get those reforms under President Trump. You know, he tried in 2017, but it didn't happen. Hopefully we will get another chance here in the near future to, you know, reform health care, let people buy the coverage they want. And by the way, let everybody have a tax-free health savings account where they can save money because it's tax-free and use that account to pay for their out-of-pocket health expenses and devices, drugs, whatever they need. It's like getting a discount, and they can save and invest the money, too, to build for the future. And it puts them in control. They're better shoppers for care. They ask for the price. That will help transform our system. But we need to make it happen. We need to change the law.
We got to make it happen. Yeah. What a wild concept, actually having a health savings account. We can set money aside and we can plan on things and actually have, you know, a safety net there to help us out with some of these bills. Dean, hang on the line here. I want to continue this conversation when we come back around the corner. It's Dean Clancy, Americans for Prosperity. We'll do some more when we come back. Back after this.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. America's safe space for common sense. This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Common sense, reason, rationale, that's what we do here on the show. So great to have you with us. Last couple of minutes on the program. By the way, speaking of health care, or at least government administration, government bureaucrats in health care, I don't know if you saw some of the big news that happened this week that I think is some pretty cool news.
It's your week in review.
As according to Newsweek, the FDA had to settle in court on some of the restrictions, censorship, if you want to put it, regarding the COVID-19 pandemic and the use of ivermectin, where if you remember when Joe Rogan ended up getting COVID and he got ivermectin that was prescribed by his doctor, by the way, and the mainstream media ran with it how he was taking horse medication. And a horse, and horse this, and horse that, and how it's all for animals. Well, that was all pushed. Remember, the collusion between media and social media and the government was pretty heavy. And the FDA was behind all of that, saying that it was only for animals, that ivermectin was not used for humans in any way, shape, or form, which is complete bogus because we know it's not true because it's been on the market for a very long time. Well, the FDA had to settle in court and is now backing off on any type of regulation on online social media or podcasts or censorship in any way regarding the use of ivermectin in the conversation about it with many doctors using that drug to help use to treat COVID-19 and some of those symptoms. So that's a big win for us, my friends, and congratulations to the fact that we're actually moving forward. Now we get to start going after them for all the shenanigans they did for the past few years.
Winning.
And I'm pretty excited about that. All right, talking about the healthcare issues, the price of it, the regulation of it, we still have on the program with us here Dean Clancy, Senior Policy Fellow for Americans for Prosperity. Dean, as we look at the difference between how healthcare was and how healthcare is today, I don't know if you have a number on this or not, but I'm assuming that the small mom-and-pop family clinics, physicians that are around the nation that used to be, I'm assuming since the taking over of Obamacare that those, for the most part, have gone to the wayside. I know many personally that were family physicians that were just mom and pop doctors that had a little clinic that had to close doors because while Barack Obama said you could keep your doctor if you want to keep your doctor, you could keep your insurance if you want to keep your insurance, he didn't cancel them. He just priced them out of the market to where they were no longer available.
Yeah, absolutely. That has happened. In fact, there's a huge problem now of physician burnout because physicians are basically becoming employees of big hospital and health insurance systems. They basically work for the health insurance companies anymore. And it's because Obamacare has basically turned healthcare into, you know, it's really dominated now by these big health insurers, which are extremely profitable, by the way, in part because of this program. And so, like, 3 out of 4 physicians nowadays are effectively employees of these systems rather than being independent businessmen, if you will. And the little family practice that you talk about, you're right. I don't know anybody like that anymore. I'm sure there's a few out there, but it doesn't pay. And so this is why a lot of physicians are just, you know, they're retiring early. Physicians have a very high suicide rate, the highest of any of the academic professions. And wow. It's kind of a crisis. And luckily, there is some good news, some hope. I mean, a lot of physicians now are basically quitting and saying, no more insurance. I'm just going to hang my shingle out, and I'm going to charge a monthly subscription. And yep. I'll be available to you. I will answer your questions. I'll meet with you. I'll spend as much time with you as you need. I'll use telehealth. And they love it because they see fewer patients, but they spend more time with them. And the patients love it, too, because they get a lot more access. It's better quality health care. It's called direct primary care, DPC. It's a growing movement, and it shows there is some hope. But basically, doctors have been pushed to the wall, and that's why they're moving to this new superior model.
Yeah, it's amazing. We've talked to a lot of doctors that are part of the direct primary care industry, and I think that's going to be the future of healthcare because, like normal, thank God for a free market, private sector, laissez-faire capitalist economy, because when there's a void and there's a demand in the market for things to be fixed, that's, I think, where we're moving towards, and we're starting to see that go in that direction. So I am really excited about how that could be more influential, and we could see essentially maybe the limitation or suppression of insurance altogether with this direct primary care option, I think, out there. Dean Clancy, Senior Policy Fellow for Americans for Prosperity. Check him out. AmericansForProsperity.org is the website. Dean, we appreciate the time very much, my friend. Let's do it again real soon.
Oh, my pleasure.
Hey, absolutely. Good stuff. Fascinating conversation. We'll do it again next time. Until then, though, we're out of time. Like usual, it goes by so fast. We had so much more to talk about and so little time to do. If you want more, check us out online at HoosierReason.com. Download the podcast at The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier and follow us on all of our social media. Thanks again for all the wonderful downloads on the podcast. Keep up that fight. Be the catalyst for change in your local community. It's time for you to speak up, speak out, speak loud, speak proud, speak the truth, and always speak some reason. This is The Voice of Reason. I'm Andy Hoosier. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on the radio. Bye.